called One Another, and the idea is to take that phrase, as we find it in the New Testament, and explore just some of those implications of one another in those different places where we find it in the New Testament. Jesus says it, Peter, Paul, they say it in their writings. In fact, we started off by looking at Jesus' words in John chapter 13, when he told the disciples to love one another. As I have loved you, so you must love one another. By this, everyone will know that you're my disciples if you love one another. Then last week, we looked at Paul's words in the book of Romans when he said to be devoted to one another in love and honor one another above yourselves and live in harmony with one another. And I didn't go on to it in the morning service, but then in Side Door, we looked at another Roman passage where Paul says, accept one another just as Christ accepted you in order to bring praise to God. And all of these passages really are talking about community and how we in the church can care for one another and interact with each other, what's appropriate and how we can get along with one another. That's what really all these are, community building passages really. And so as a part of this series, we've been interviewing different folks from the congregation. And this week I've asked Tiffany Morris if she would sit on the hot seat, and she agreed to do that. Tiffany is in the Army Reserves, if you haven't gotten a chance to meet her. She also works at Chick-fil-A in Olathe. She's also a full-time student at Mid-America Nazarene University, and she volunteers with our youth group. Tiffany, it sounds like you're pretty busy. How do you keep all that stuff straight?
I have a few different calendars that I use, and I make a lot of to-do lists.
I guess so. Tiffany, I think we all are thankful for your service to the country, being in the Army Reserves. And if anyone has ever been to Chick-fil-A, I'm sure that they are thankful for your good service there. But I want to talk to you about your service to our students in the youth group. We just talked about you're very, very busy. You have a lot of things going on in your life, full-time student, Army Reserves, working Chick-fil-A, all those things. Why do you give your time to be with our students?
Because it's so important. I mean, at Chick-fil-A, while it is delicious, it's just making a sandwich. But here, I have the ability to make a big difference.
I heard you say one time that even after you graduate from Mid-America, that you're planning on staying around in the area for a little while, kind of putting your career on hold while you continue to work with our students. Why would you give yourself to that?
Growing up, I had a volunteer in my youth group that I got really close to, and I've seen the huge difference that having a mentor and having a good friend and having almost a parent figure can have in your life. And I want to do that for our students, and that's what I'm doing here.
Well, that's great. Tiffany, tell me this. If you had to pinpoint it, what drives you to serve our teenagers, to serve the Lord, to be a volunteer youth worker like you're doing? What is the driving force?
For me, it's all about love. I love our students so much. When I came here, our freshman class were seventh graders, and to see how much they've grown and to see how much they've matured and just to see their walk with God is amazing, and I love that, and I want to be a part of that.
Well, that's exciting. Tiffany, if you haven't caught the theme of today's service, we're talking about serving one another, and Tiffany is a great example of someone who is giving her life in the service of others. Thank you, Tiffany.
Thank you.
God has made us free to serve. That was Paul's words to the Galatians in chapter 5. That's our theme for the day. And it's also the words that Peter used in his writings as well. Peter, in 1 Peter chapter 4, he talks about how we can serve one another. In chapter 5 of that same book, Peter tells that he is writing from Babylon. Probably that meant that was kind of a code word. There was a little town called Babylon, but more than likely Peter wasn't there. But rather, he was using that term Babylon as a code for Rome. He was probably in Rome, where he would later be executed for his faith. And he was writing to this group of churches that we would call as Asia Minor. Today, it would be places like Turkey and Greece, maybe Albania, where some churches were located. Those churches under heavy persecution. And Peter, in this rather short letter, talks to them about the church, and he's giving them insight into what it means to be followers of Jesus Christ and living in community. And nestled in that letter, in 1 Peter chapter 4, Peter writes this: God has given each of you, if you were using if you had your Bible out and were following along, I would encourage you to circle that God has given each of you, or to underline each of you. God has given each of you a gift from his great variety of spiritual gifts. Use them well to serve one another. All right, let's dig into this brief verse from Peter. God has given each of you a gift from his great variety of spiritual gifts. Use them well to serve one another. First thing we can see is that God is the one who's given us these gifts. Your gifts, your talents, your abilities, they're from God. People who complain about their lack of gifts or lack of abilities or lack of talents or whatever, I think they have a couple of misunderstandings. One is they misunderstand themselves. They don't totally understand that they were created in God's image and God is full of gifts and grace. And they also don't understand God's generosity and the power that he has given each of. Peter said it, God has given each of you. A fundamental error that sometimes we have is to think that our gifts and our talents are simply our gifts and our talents, but they're not. Our gifts and our talents have been given to us by God. God has loaned them to us, I suppose you could say. Again, going back to Paul's words in Galatians 5, but you have been called to live in freedom, my brothers and sisters. But don't use your freedom to satisfy your sinful natures. Instead, use your freedom to serve one another. That's what we're called to do. We're called to use those gifts and the abilities that God has given us to serve the world. God has called me to preach. One of the gifts that he has given me is preach. If I wouldn't be preaching, I would not be doing what God has called me to do. God has also called me to write. And so I've been writing here and there. And next, either this fall or in next spring, many of you know, a book is coming out from my headache journey. God has called me to do that. That was not just of my own. I believe that is just as real as he has called me to preach, he has called me to write. And so I had to do that, to use my gifts and the things that God has given me for his glory. What is God calling you to do? What gifts has he given you so that you might use them how to serve one another? Don't tell me you don't have any gifts. As Peter said, God has given each of you one of those gifts. Maybe you need to discover it. Maybe you need to embrace it. But God has given each of us a gift. That's, I guess, the second point. Though we are different, each of us has been given a gift. We're not the same. You may not have the same gifts as me, and I don't have the same gifts as you. We can be, in fact, completely different, and yet still be serving God and doing what God has called us to do. Think in your mind. Who, if you could think of two people in the Bible who were perfectly living out, or as best as they could, living out the will of God in their life, who would those two people be? The two best examples of people living out God's call for their life in the Bible, who would it be? Well, we know the Sunday school answer. One would be Jesus. That's always the right answer. And so we'd say, all right, well, Jesus was perfectly living out God's will in his life, but who would the second person be? I contend to you that it's the one that Jesus said this about. I tell you, among those born of women, which I suppose would include just about everybody, right? I tell you, among those born of women, there is no one greater than this guy. Do you know who he's talking about? John the Baptist. Jesus and John the Baptist, that's a pretty strong recommendation from Jesus. Among all the people born of a woman, no one is greater than John the Baptist. So I think we could say, well, Jesus was completely in God's will. And John the Baptist, if Jesus himself said that no one is greater than him, would be pretty well in God's will. But Jesus and John the Baptist, the reason I bring this up, are very, very different individuals. In fact, you could say they're polar opposites. Personality-wise, they were very, very different. Remember, John the Baptist was an ascetic. He lived in the wilderness, totally away from people. He was lived in many ways in isolation. If people wanted to hear him preach, they went to the wilderness here. And he wasn't going to come to you. You had to go to him. Remember, we all know the stories of John the Baptist, who wore those weird clothes, this itchy camel-haired clothes, and he had a strange diet, bugs and honey. He was somewhat of a recluse. Most Bible scholars would say that he was of the Old Testament sect, the Nazarites, not to be confused with the Nazarenes. It's part of the Nazarites, which meant he didn't shave, he didn't drink wine. He was very much, again, a recluse in many, many ways. He was totally in God's will. When you look at John the Baptist, if you look at him, we're completely honest, you'd say, you know, he's kind of an odd duck, but he was totally in God's will. And then you have Jesus. Jesus is totally different. Jesus loved being around people. Jesus went to parties, lots of parties. In fact, in one of those parties, he turned the water into wine. Not only was he not a recluse, but the people he hung out with were tax collectors and prostitutes and other sinners, the Bible says. You'd be hard-pressed to find two people who are more opposite than Jesus and John the Baptist. And yet each of them were doing exactly what God would have called them to do. I think, well, that's a little confusing. Don't worry, it was confusing to John himself. In fact, John was looking at Jesus' ministry, and even though John had led the way for Jesus to come, and even though John had baptized Jesus, and even though John heard in Luke chapter 3, verse 22, "You are my son, whom I love, whom I well pleased." John did all that. Even though by Luke chapter 7, John is scratching his head, well, saying, Jesus' ministry sure isn't like my ministry. In fact, he sent a couple of his followers to Jesus. And they said, "John the Baptist sent us to ask you, are you the one who's to come, or should we expect someone else?" And Jesus didn't respond to him by saying something like, "Listen, look back at the Old Testament. All those prophecies are all about me. Are you kidding me? You're asking me if I'm the one?" He didn't say that. Nor did he say, "You go back and tell John, remember what you heard in the Jordan River? I'm God's son, whom he's well pleased. You kidding me?" He didn't say that. This is what Jesus told those disciples of John. He said, "Go back and report to John what you've seen and heard. The blind receive sight, the lame walk, those who have leprosy are cleansed, the deaf hear, the dead are raised, and good news is proclaimed to the poor. You tell John what you see around here. By their fruit." The fruit, that's the point. By your fruit, you'll know them. And Jesus is basically saying, check out my fruit, boys. It's the lame are walking, the blind are seeing, the deaf are hearing, the lepers are well, the good news is being preached to the poor. That's all the fruit. My point to all this, God doesn't make cookie cutter Christians where we all have to think the same, dress the same, like the same type of music. Some of us are extroverts, some of us are introverts. Some of us like rock and roll, some of us like Mozart, some of us like the Royals, others of us like the defending American League champion, Detroit Tigers. It's just, we're all different, that's okay. There are a great variety of people, that's the idea, with a great variety of gifts, all given gifts by the same Father who is giving us those gifts. Why? So that we might serve one another. Why? So that we might reach our generation for him. So, God is the giver of the gifts. Each one of us has given a gift, and there's a great variety of gifts. Again, your gifts may not be the same as my gifts. My gifts will be different from your gifts. Our personalities are different. But every one of us has been given gifts and abilities to be used for God's glory. One of my churches, there was a lady who called me up. She must have been having a bad week. And she called me up. She was very distressed. She was very upset. And she was all upset about how she wasn't doing anything of significance, anything of consequence for the Lord. And she was very upset by that. And she didn't have any gifts and abilities. She didn't know what she could do because she didn't have anything. I should have pointed her to 1 Peter chapter 4, but I didn't do that. And I should tell you, let me step back. I should tell you, this lady was, she worked in our nursery. She was great with our infants and toddlers at the church where I was. I mean, she was like, she was kind of that church's version of Jerry Godwin, you know, kind of a baby whisperer. And you put babies in their arms, and in her arms, and she would quiet them down. Even when babies are first there for the first time, you know, she just seemed to have the knack of being able to be around children and infants and toddlers. She was great. And I said that to her. I said, you know, you're great in the nursery. Are you kidding me? You just are so gifted, and babies love coming to you, and you make them feel welcome and secure and cared for and loved. She goes, oh, Pastor, anybody can love babies. Anybody could do that. That's no gift. And so I tried my hardest to convince her that she was gifted and talented and had abilities, and didn't go anywhere. That next Sunday, that very next Sunday, we had that conversation like on a Tuesday or Wednesday. That very next Sunday, just as it happened, a new single mom came to our church for the very first time. And she took her baby, her toddler, to the nursery and left her off with this lady and came into church. And on that particular Sunday, it doesn't always work this way. In fact, I don't know that it usually works this way. But on that particular Sunday, I was preaching a very plain, very simple salvation message. At the end of the service, I had an altar call. People were coming down. And this lady, she came down to the altar. A couple of the old saints of the church went up and prayed with her, and she accepted Jesus. After the service, they're walking out, the two old ladies, they were sisters, they came up to me with this young lady and said, Pastor, do you know what happened today? I said, no. I said, this was Stacy's first time in church, and she hadn't been in church before, and she came down to the altar, and she accepted Jesus. And so we were just praising the Lord, and we were all excited about it. And somewhere in that conversation, Stacy was her name, she said, oh my goodness, my daughter's still in the nursery. They probably think I abandoned her. I said, you got a daughter in the nursery? She said, yeah. I said, I'm going with you. And so I went with her to the nursery, and I introduced her again to the lady in the nursery. And they had already met, of course, when she dropped off her daughter. But I introduced them again, and I said to the lady in the nursery, the Pied Piper lady, who didn't think she had any gifts and abilities, I said, you know what happened today? She said, no, what happened? I said, Stacy came here. This is her first time in church. I said, and she came here, she dropped off her baby with you, and because she was able to do that and go into worship and be able to not worry about her daughter but could concentrate on what God was saying to her, she went down to the altar, she accepted the Lord today. I said, it's all because you were in the nursery taking care of her little girl. I said, if you wouldn't been doing that, she probably wouldn't have found the Lord today. I said, what you're doing has kingdom implications. And she got really excited. You know, what has gifts and abilities has God given you? Again, your gifts and abilities will be different from mine. I'm no baby whisperer. You put a baby in my arms, we'll both be screaming for an hour. Are you kidding me? That is not my gift. But God has given each of us gifts and abilities. God has called you to use those gifts and abilities, then, number four, really, at this point, to serve one another. God has given each of us a gift from his great variety of spiritual gifts. Use them well to serve one another. We have gifts and abilities not so that we might simply make money or gain notoriety. Our gifts have been given to us so that we might serve one another. So the big question is, are you doing it? Are you using your gifts and abilities well to serve one another? Jesus told us on Judgment Day, the king's gonna look at us and to his servants, he's gonna say, well, that was a great idea. Well, you thought that through. You had good intentions. No, he's going to say, well done. Well done, my good and faithful servant. What are you doing with the gifts and abilities that God has given you? Let me make a bold prediction. The biggest regret at the end of your life won't be the things that you did that you wish you hadn't done, but rather the biggest regret will be the things you didn't do but you wish you had. And I get that from two social psychologists research, a guy by the name of Tom Gilovich and a lady by the name of Vicky Medved, who, according to their research, regrets, time is the key factor in regrets. And over the short term, we tend to regret the things that we did, those action regrets. You know, oh, I wish I wouldn't have had that triple fudge sundae. That was a bad choice. Oh, I wish I wouldn't have been speeding when the policeman was behind me. That was dumb. That was a bad thing. Oh, I wish I wouldn't have gotten angry and said those words. I wish I hadn't have done that. We, in the short term, over the course of a week, we tend to regret those things we did that we wish we wouldn't have done. But over the long term, we tend to regret those things that we didn't do that we wish we had, those inaction regrets. In fact, their research shows that in the course of a week, 53% to 47%, we regret the actions that we did that we wish we hadn't done. But over the long haul, over the course of our life, when people look at their lives as a whole, inaction regrets, those things that we didn't do that we wish we had done, outnumber action regrets, get this, 84% to 16%. Our deepest regrets at the end of our lives will be the risks not taken, dreams that we didn't pursue, opportunities that we didn't seize, occasions to serve when we chose not to serve. When I was pastoring in Michigan, you know, everybody, it seems, has had their job through the auto industry. It just, you know, in every church there were, most of the people worked for some way, some connection to the auto industry. And one of my churches had an executive with one of the big three automakers. And his job, I think, I was trying to remember this week, I think he was the principal buyer of glass. I think that's what his was. And he was, you know, when you buy cars, have a lot of glass. And so when you're the principal buyer of glass, you have a pretty big job. And he had worked there for like 40 years, worked his way up. And finally he, you know, had the corner office and the big thing and bought all the glass. And I'll never forget, though, him telling me his story. In fact, I was so moved by his story. Eventually, I had him speak at our one men's retreat one year. Because he told me that on the day of his retirement, he worked there for like 40 years. On the day of his retirement, they had a big party and, you know, there were speeches given and all these things. And he was walking out of his office with a box of the stuff from the, you know, his pictures and things like that from his office. And he said he turned back around, and as he turned around, he saw the new, you know, junior executive moving into his office and taking up his space and going to carry on his job. And he said to me, he said, Pastor, I looked around and it dawned on me that I gave my life to a company that wasn't going to miss me one bit. Somebody was filling my job and the company wasn't going to miss a beat. And he said, and at that moment, I realized that I had given my best to the company, sometimes neglecting my kids, sometimes neglecting my wife, frequently neglecting God. I had given them my best. But when I was gone, there was somebody else doing the same job in my old office. But my kids only had one dad, and my wife only had one husband. It was really sad. And so I had him speak to our men's retreat. There's this guy, very successful in the world's eyes, saying, you know what? What did I give my life to? Paul Tsongas, you may remember him as a politician. Maybe you agreed with his politics, maybe you didn't. But I think we can all agree with his statement, said no one at the end of their life said, I wish I would have spent more time in the office. How true that is. When your life is said and done, you're not going to think about how big your TV screen was or the size of your house. But you may say, I wish I would have spent more time with my family. I wish that I would have accomplished something great for God. I wish I would have done something with my life other than just make money and go on nice vacations. What are you doing with the gifts and abilities that God has given you? Are you using them well to serve one another? Quite frankly, I think God takes this stuff really serious. I think it matters to God how we're using the gifts and abilities that he has given us, not to gain our salvation, not that at all, but rather once we've received the glory of God in our lives, he expects us, he calls us to use those gifts and abilities for his glory. In James chapter 4, verse 17 rather, the end of, that's the last verse in that chapter. It says, it is a sin to know what you ought to do and not to do it. God takes this stuff really serious. He's given you gifts and talents and abilities from his great variety of gifts. What are you doing with them? You remember the story? You ought to remember it. I've preached on it, it seems like 1,000 times. Jesus' story of the man with that went away and gave his servants the talents. Remember a talent, it was a sum of money, and he gave the one guy 5 talents, the other guy 2 talents, one guy 1 talent. You remember that story. And the 5-talent guy, he doubles it, gets 10. The 2-talent guy doubles it, gets 4. And 1-talent guy, you remember what he does, he buries it. And I was thinking about that in relation to the sermon this week and thinking, you know, why did the 1-talent guy only get 1 talent? You know, he gives one guy 5, one guy 2, one guy 1. Why did he get it? And we know what happens. The 1-talent guy, he buries it. And when the master returns, he tells us why he buried it. He said, well, I knew you were a hard man. I knew that you, you know, you would be kind of mean and angry if I took my talent and blew it, and so I just buried it. Why do you only get one talent? And I think I came to a conclusion. I think the one talent guy only got one talent because the master is a good master. He knew the people working for him. I think he knew he was hoping he could just trust him with one talent. My guess is the master had some dealings with that guy. In fact, probably he did have dealings with the guy, and that's probably why the guy said, I knew you were a hard man. Do you remember the five-talent guy who turned it into 10, the two-talent guy who turned it into 4, neither one of them said, I knew you were a hard guy. That's why I really worked hard to get that 5 or to get that extra 2. They didn't say that. Only the one-talent guy said that. So my guess is they had some experiences in the past, and the master knew he was a good master. He said, I knew this guy. I sure hope I can trust him with one measly talent. And in the end, we saw that he really couldn't. He just buried it. And my question is for us, can God trust you? Are you trustworthy? Are you trustworthy with the things that God has given you? Trustworthy to use them for God's glory? How much can God trust you with? How much can he trust me with? How many opportunities and talents and gifts and things has God given you? Don't tell me about what you don't have. Don't tell me about the talents you don't have. What are you doing with the talents you do have? Don't tell me about the money you don't have. What are you doing with the money you do have? Don't tell me about the gifts you wish you had. What are you doing with the gifts that you do have? What is God calling you to do? How are you using the gifts and the abilities that God has given you to serve one another? Not just to serve yourself, not just to serve your family, to serve one another. We're going to pray, and then we're going to sing a song. And as we sing that song, if you want to come up here and pray, maybe God has been laying something on your heart, some gift that he's given you that you have not been using, and you just want to dedicate that to him, by all means, as we sing this song, if you want to come down here and pray, or maybe you've just got something else going on in your life and you find it easier to pray up here, by all means, you can do that. But let's pray. Lord, it's true, you've given us gifts and abilities, every one of us. You've given us those things from a great variety of gifts. There's so many. We're not the same people. Every one of us is different. But you've gifted us with gifts and abilities to be used not just for our own enrichment, not just to make our life more comfortable. You've given us those things. Paul said it, Peter said it, so that we might serve one another in love. Help us to use those gifts and abilities for your glory. And Lord, if there's any of us here that say, you know, I haven't been using my gifts. I know God has gifted me to, maybe it's work with children, or maybe it's sing in the choir, or maybe it's to help out in one way or another, but I haven't been using them. Would you call on us and check us, Lord, to be the people that you have called us to be. We do want to use our gifts and present them to you as an offering. Help us, Lord, to be your people in everything we say and do. In your name, amen.